Audible, the judge of the United States of the Court of Appeals.
All right, thank you. You can be seated. Mr. Regal, whenever you're ready.
I'm with the law firm of Childs and Halligan. We represent the South Carolina Association of School Administrators in this matter, which we'll refer to as SCAS. SCAS's appeal presents the question of whether the district court erred in declining jurisdiction over SCAS's declaratory judgment action, challenging the constitutionality of the South Carolina Freedom of Information Act, or the FOIA. Specifically, the district court declined jurisdiction under the Younger and Pullman abstention doctrines over SCAS's claim that the FOIA's definition of public body to include private organizations supported only in part by public funds violates the First Amendment.
The normal course of getting into federal court is by way of removal, not by way of filing a separate declaratory judgment.
Yes, Your Honor, that is one course to do it. Removal, since it would be a defense to the FOIA claim.
Well, but
I mean, wouldn't I?
This wasn't removed.
No, it was not removed because the FOIA claim itself is a state court claim that was brought by Mr. DiSabato in state court.
There was no diversity.
No, Your Honor.
And as far as there's no federal question raised other than defensively, that there was no federal question on the face of the complaint.
That's correct, yes, sir.
So this was not covered under any of the removal statutes?
No.
You could not remove the case?
We could not have removed it.
So you decided to essentially make the removal statute a dead letter by circumventing them, circumventing the requirement of diversity and circumventing the face of the complaint rule by filing a declaratory judgment act in federal court.
I would respectfully disagree with that characterization.
No, but isn't that what happened? You couldn't get into federal court in the way that Congress has prescribed by virtue of federal question jurisdiction or diversity.
We don't
care what the removal statute say. We're going to do an end run around them.
We
can file a declaratory judgment.
We couldn't get into federal court by way of removal or removal jurisdiction or diversity, but declaratory judgment action asserting a First Amendment right is a perfectly legitimate action.
But where does this leave the removal statute? And where does it leave the face of the complaint?
I mean,
what does it do to the removal statute? The very, very highly reticulated scheme that Congress has set forth between you can take. This was a state court action brought under questions of state law. The federal question had come in only defensively. Congress has set forth very strict ground rules about when something is removable and when something's not. The Supreme Court has set forth very strict ground rules about the face of the complaint rule. And so this Declaratory Judgment Act sort of takes on the Supreme Court and the face of the complaint rule and takes on Congress and its stipulation for ground rule for removal, doesn't it?
Yes, sure. I mean, it does implicate that.
On, doesn't it?
I think the Younger abstention, to the extent it applies or is meant to apply in various extent.
Normally, I'm a little bit afraid taking on either kind of Supreme Court. Here we appear to be challenging them both. While I'm at it, we're going to rule Judge Curry was guilty of abuse of discretion.
Correct. We are
going to do that too.
We are arguing she guilty is, I think, not the word I would choose, but she did abuse her discretion.
she committed an abuse of discretion in abstaining under these circumstances.
Yes, Your Honor. And I think it's not, you know, we would not have.
It was an abuse of discretion despite the fact that there was a pending state lawsuit, right?
Yes.
A pending state lawsuit. And the same parties were involved in the state lawsuit that were involved in the federal lawsuit. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, and the same questions were presented in the state lawsuit as in the federal lawsuit.
Not at the time, they were not.
Well, they are now.
They are now.
And given all of this, in addition to everything you and I have done over, you're going to say that this is an abuse of discretion on the part of the district court.
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, I have a further question for you. Where does this leave state courts trying to adjudicate questions of state law dealing with a state statute such as FOIA, which is important to the state's, you know, say sovereign interests or whatever? We put it generously to say that it leaves them second class citizens. Perhaps it would be more accurate to say that taking this case away would leave them as third class citizens.
I would disagree, Your Honor. I think that's the body of abstention law. One specifically arises and addresses issues where removal often is not available, but it has the same effect in bringing an action in federal court as, you know, what might be termed a circumvention of the state court process. It is not relegating the state courts to second class status.
I said third.
Or third class status. This is a federal issue. Adjudicating questions of the First Amendment are, you know, the unflagging.
It's a federal issue, okay? But since when are state courts disabled from adjudicating a federal question?
They are not disabled from adjudicating.
Is there any reason they could not have adjudicated this when it was raised in the answer?
Well, we have not, just clarification, we have not answered the complaint in state court. And just another, just to be, I guess, so the court is fully up to date on the status of that, the state court case. We did supplement the record. The claim was dismissed by the circuit court and is now on appeal before the state Supreme Court, and the state attorney general has intervened, has moved at least to intervene in that action.
And what was the basis for the state court's dismissal?
That the FOIA violated First Amendment as applied to Skassel.
So it's taken on the Constitution.
It did. We raised it in a motion to dismiss, and the circuit court, Judge Cooper, granted our motion to dismiss. At this point, it is on appeal.
Why are you here? I'm going back to Judge Wilkerson's point, and that is, it seems as though you just answered the question by saying it's already happened. The state courts can. Of course, that's one of the factors to consider in the general attention. And what I can see, at least two of them are slam dunk. That's one of them, and the other one being that there's an ongoing state proceeding. The only thing you got left is whether there's a substantial state interest in. It, clearly, they've got an interest in their own FOIA Act and what's going on here. So, I mean, I'm trying to understand where are you going?
Well, if I guess, take on those questions, I mean, initially the matter is on appeal. So until the Supreme Court rules on the matter,
why should the parties be having to litigate these same issues twice?
We shouldn't have to be litigating them twice.
Isn't that just running up the meter for everybody?
No, we should not have to be litigating them twice. And typically we would not have. And the state court proceeding took a year and a half to get to our motion to dismiss. Had Judge Curry not dismissed this action, I believe the federal court would have reached the issue in advance of that. So we wouldn't have been in a position to.
Oh, so.
Do that twice.
So we're supposed to look at who's likely to reach the issue first?
That is one of the factors, yes, of an expeditious hearing. Yes, that is one of the factors. And I think particularly with the First Amendment claim, where recently in Wisconsin Right to Life, Judge Alito issued a concurring opinion, and in another recent Supreme Court case, John Doe versus Reed, the court opined that in an as-applied analysis for constitutionality, it's important that there be an opportunity for an expeditious resolution of the claim with minimal or no discovery. We are still not confident that the state court ultimately will afford us that opportunity. It took us 18 months to get to our motion to dismiss. Well, it's on appeal with the Supreme Court now.
Don't you have mechanisms in state court for expediting? I hate to tell you, but the federal courts aren't always restricted for runners in the race either.
There are mechanisms for expediting them. But I think the central concern is South Carolina's motion to dismiss standards and summary judgment standards represent far higher burdens than federal court standards for those expedited resolution procedures.
But the fact that state procedures and federal procedures may not be identical, that seems to me a very illusory basis on which to adjudicate and judge these kind of attention findings. I don't know what the state courts have done wrong here. I associate myself with Judge Wynn's query. Why are you here? What have the state courts done wrong? Normally, when you say that somebody abused the discretion in ordering, a younger abstention, you look and see if there's something that's gone amiss in state court. But I don't see that.
When this is filed, the federal case, the state court case was 30 days old. It was represented a decision by SCASA to seek a declaration in federal court whose almost unflagging obligation is to resolve constitutional issues, because we believe you get a farther reaching and more expeditious resolution of the First Amendment issue, which again is a paramount concern to SCASA, its exercise of its First Amendment rights, and to the federal courts. It's a direct federal question. The FOIA claim is a state law question. It did not and does not seem illegitimate to me to ask a federal court to resolve a federal question, particularly one of paramount federal concern. We do not agree that the FOIA itself represents a sovereign interest of the state of South Carolina. It creates a private right of access in citizens. It's not like a pay-to-play law or the Ethics Act, which is designed to...
But you won, did you not, in state court?
We did win in state court, but we didn't. When we filed this case, we didn't know whether or not we would be obviously successful in state court. And we did it only after having to undergo extensive and burdensome discovery, which again is expressly contrary to Justice Alito and the Supreme Court's discussion of how as-applied challenges should be resolved, and certainly as to how facial challenges should be resolved. Back to the state interest, it's not like a pay-to-play law or an Ethics Act, which are designed to protect the government itself from corruption. The FOIA creates a private right of access to records, and to paraphrase the Harper decision, it says how you get records. It doesn't say what to do with those records. It doesn't require citizens to give copies of records to the Attorney General so that the Attorney General can determine whether public bodies are acting in accordance with law or are acting responsibly. It's simply a statutory expansion of private right of access. And here it's a private right of access to the records of private organizations.
Is there anything that you just said to me that you couldn't say in state court?
No, there's not.
Every word of it.
And that is it.
Every single word of it.
That is correct, but that is not the ultimate question under Younger or under Pullman. Further, we have alleged in the federal complaint. My time is up.
All right, you've got some time remaining. Let's hear from Mr. Hall.
Thank you.
Good morning, and may it please the court. I'm Kevin Hall, and represent Rocky D, a radio broadcaster in this case. This is Forum Shopping 101. All right. This is, let's take a second bite at the apple before we've even finished the first or maybe even answer the complaint in the first. And it demonstrates offense to the notions of federalism and comity that undergird all of the abstention doctrines, and specifically Pullman and Younger, on which Judge Curry relied.
But the point is, we're here on an abuse of discretion standard.
Absolutely. Here, as the court's well aware, yeah, there's a three-step process under Younger. You know, is there a state court proceeding? Undisputed, yes, there is. Does the state court proceeding implicate an important state interest? Now, the only substantive argument that I've heard is that a conclusory statement that somehow FOIA doesn't implicate the state's interest. Now, FOIA regulates exactly how the government works and the people of the state interact with the government. It says what records you can inspect. It says a jailer must maintain a list of who's in jail for the preceding 3 months. It provides...
Is the status of the state case is up before the Supreme Court?
It is. A order was issued by Judge Cooper holding the FOIA statute unconstitutional. We disagree with that. The Attorney General obviously disagrees as well. He has intervened on the appeal to the South Carolina Supreme Court, and that intervention was granted.
There's going to be a thorough airing.
Oh, absolutely,
of the
Judge.
Issue in the state's highest court.
Absolutely, Judge. And every argument constitutionally that you said could be made here, you could have said to the federal or the state court, was said to the state court and persuaded Judge Cooper. We have a system that can take you either directly to the Court of Appeals, but yes, we also do have a rule that allows you to expedite directly to the Supreme Court. So it would have gone there had that not been the normal track.
So the state interest here seems to be the real key, if any possibility on the Younger case. The Pennsauer case, which is the one that sort of interesting in terms of trying to identify the state interest there with bond, I guess the state had interest in bond. And thinking from the perspective of this case, don't look at Mr. Oreo is the only thing you can look at to make a determination whether it's state interest in. You've articulated what you think would be the basis of that statement.
I have, Judge, and I could go on and on. I give you several more examples. Are photographs from an autopsy public record? Where would the state speak to that in their FOIA law?
You don't even need to go to the Pullman.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, the first sentence of the FOIA statute reads, the General Assembly finds that it is vital in a democratic society.
It's effective in the Younger extension from the standpoint of the federal court has to retain.
That's right. And you note that obviously Younger is primarily where Judge Curry's brief order went and dropped the footnote with regard to Pullman. But clearly here, the whole question of anyone's rights being implicated as a constitutional matter turns on whether they are in fact a quote unquote public body.
You know, the point is nobody's being denied their day in court.
No, Judge.
Day being singular. Maybe people are being denied their multiple days in multiple courts, but nobody's being, you know, when you look at it from a standpoint of somebody's right to access, to hear their claims heard, to have their claims fairly considered, that's what the courts are basically about. And that's not being denied here. That's not being deprived here. It's being afforded ample.
We agree with that, Judge. In the record, that's not a hypothetical statement because the record here and the pendency of this case demonstrates that. We've seen a circuit court judge act. We've seen a case go to the Supreme Court. We've seen an attorney general intervene. We've seen the Press Association make inquiry and contemplate intervention publicly. This is the normal course of action. It happens all the time. Respectfully but candidly, were a little surprised to be here for oral argument. We thought the issues were pretty direct. Well, I love seeing you guys, and I got to see a deer in the courtyard outside this morning, which was a first in a city. But in all seriousness, the interference of a state court with a pending state court proceeding is so aptly demonstrated here. And what we have is an attempt to prevent the state court from adjudicating its own determination of how government is to operate and how people are to interface with government. There couldn't be anything more directly related to state interest than that. Now, we can go through the...
Well, I don't know why Citizens United seems to pop up in my head when I hear something like a nonprofit organization coming up, and even though that was a corporation.
Right.
I'm wondering now, too, don't we have something really big that's happening here? That
I don't think so, Judge. Let me tell you why. I've been up here on those Citizens United and Wisconsin Right to Life cases as well. Here's the difference. Statutes that regulate speech implicate First Amendment rights facially. The only thing that triggers FOIA is whether you receive or expend public funds. This isn't a speech statute. It's not a campaign finance statute. It says if you take public money, with that come certain responsibilities. You are rendered a public body, or you render yourself a public body, and there are certain there's a certain degree of transparency required of you. That is materially different than the First Amendment cases cited with regard to Citizens United, Wisconsin Right to Life, and so forth. Those speech cases deal with political speech and whether you can regulate political speech.
The First Amendment claim here is that FOIA violates the First Amendment.
Yes, sir. That's the claim. And
I mean, that I have never heard that before.
Well,
there may be other questions. There may be other problems with the FOIA statute, and there may be questions about its scope and its applicability and all of those. They strike me primarily as state law questions. The federal, and you know, in addition to all the other problems with this, the federal question seems to me to be a little bit trumped up. I always thought FOIA was designed to further and promote First Amendment interests by adding to the store of knowledge that would inform public debate. Now we've got this, you know, turned outside in question that FOIA violates the First Amendment. And so that the federal question, such as it is, has the oddest kind of ring about it.
Well, and Your Honor, that's why, there aren't any cases cited.
A little bit trumped up. And, the real questions here are questions of state law, it seems to me, which is, how far does this question go? Does the South Carolina FOIA statute cover only public entities, or does it cover private entities which receive substantial public funding? Well, that's a question of state law.
Absolutely.
That isn't that's not a question of the state can design that. I mean, I cannot imagine the Supreme Court saying that a FOIA statute in a state which is designed to have, and the Supreme Court's been very protective of FOIA at the federal level, and they say that you're not going to hold the state. They're going to smile ever so gently. Hear the claim that a FOIA statute violates the First Amendment.
Well, Judge, we agree with that. And in fact, the court has done in South Carolina exactly what you described. Back in the early 90s, there's a case, a Weston case, in which the court was asked the question, does a University of South Carolina Research and Development Foundation that works in conjunction with the university but is a private entity, is that a public body for FOIA purposes? And there was much debate about it. On one end, people said, oh, my goodness.
But it seems like the kind of body of law that is ideally developed by state court.
It is, and it's developed every day in 50 state courts with press associations pushing those issues and litigating them. And I've represented press interest in those. It is a robust area of state law practice. If this jaunt to federal court were encouraged, you'd see 50 FOIAs or their state equivalents, and a federal one rendered pretty much a nullity with regard to a state court's ability to adjudicate those statutes.
We'd be giving a hefty boost to our own docket.
I think you would. It might start looking like a criminal docket, at least as a percentage of what you deal with. I will sit myself down unless the court has any additional questions. Yes, sir.
The argument here is, yes, the court is violation of the First Amendment, but it's focusing on a narrow part of it that says public corporation, because it's involved in issue of advocacy, political speech. And therein is the First Amendment violation that's asserted. And so once you get that point asserted, the First Amendment violation, then you come up to the question that that's where the exception is being asked to apply. And I'm with you in terms of
right.
a general First Amendment to for your wooden. I don't see anything at all, but when you start getting into, you're going to find a public corporation, and then you break it down as a private corporation that engages in political speech or issue of advocacy, you are implicating a First Amendment right, probably, that won't be looked at.
Yeah.
And that's why I brought up the Citizens United, because
sure.
It sure sounded just like it to
sure.
me, that if you had a statute, you could basically say any corporation that does this, I guess, bigger money, but even I'm not sure you could do it without money.
Well,
and it's just something that I'm not sure.
A couple points in response, Judge. I think I acknowledge the theoretical potential for what Your Honor's described. I think that what you have, though, is an argument that is premised on the idea that they are not a public body. When you see a brief that sprinkles the words flagrantly and patently unconstitutional all over the place without saying why, those are obviously the magic words for the exception. But then you go and say, well, what is it that is being implicated here? What are the constitutional issues? Well, there aren't any. I mean, this is not a speech statute. Someone says, well, I happen to engage in that sort of speech. All right. That doesn't exempt you from all regulation. A classic example would be take a Citizens United. Citizens United doesn't strike down disclosure requirements.
That's the point, that the Citizens United decision is very emphatic in
yes.
saying that the quid pro quo here is, yeah, you get to speak as much as you want, but the other side of the fence is you got to disclose.
That's right.
And FOIA deals with that disclosure aspect. And the Supreme Court in Citizens United was very intent upon upholding the disclosure aspect of campaign finance laws as a sort of a quid pro quo for greater expenditure rights.
Exactly, Judge. It's a question between prohibition and sunshine. Essentially, Citizens United allows the sunshine by way of disclosure requirements. It strikes down the prohibition on certain speech and activity by unions and corporations. So it is, again, goes back precisely to the point Your Honor made. There's no greater statutory effort to champion the cause of the First Amendment than Freedom of Information Acts. And it's for that reason that you see the Press Association and press interest everywhere being the leading folks here.
Disclosure Supreme Court. But the
That's
point
right.
is, we're getting a little bit, I'm getting a little bit far afield, because your basic point is that even if there was a significant First Amendment issue, you know, the state courts are competent to resolve it. I mean, I know an awful lot of very able, capable state court judges. And I would be reluctant to say to them, look, I can do this, and you can't.
Judge, we agree. And I think the process that has unfolded during this case's pendency demonstrates that. I mean, the process is working its normal course. We had a disappointing order from a circuit court judge. We've appealed it to the state Supreme Court. The Attorney General's intervened, and we'll hash it out. We'll either win or we'll lose, but the court will clarify. And another important note I want to make the court aware of, and the court is already aware of it, but obviously construing the term public body is the triggering mechanism in any FOIA case. And so when you make a, when you say, hey, I'm not a public body and therefore my constitutional rights are implicated, you are presupposing a determination that you are not a public body. Well, who would determine if you're a public body? Is the federal court going to do that? Is the federal court going to read the definition? Is the federal court going to address discovery as to what you are and what you do and what you don't do? Why can't the state court do that?
So you've given us information here before that's going to proceed to dismiss the infringement of the state court association. I don't think we're private, but maybe we're separation.
What we'll do with the court's permission is simply make the order of last week granting the Attorney General's intervention a part of the record. I'm not sure exactly as I stand here procedurally how to do that, but I will figure that out and do it. One of the arguments in advance in the brief that predated obviously the Attorney General's successful intervention was, hey, the state doesn't have a dog in this fight. They obviously don't care. They're looking the other way. Well, that wasn't true. At the time, and that's obviously not the test. The test is whether a state interest is there, not whether a particular political actor has decided to engage or somebody with limited resources has decided to engage. But clearly now that the Attorney General has engaged, that argument is rendered hollow. Thank y'all.
Regal, you have some time remaining.
Briefly, back to the removal issue. I think removal does not want state claims dragged into federal court. That's not the issue here. There's nothing about removal that disfavors federal courts from hearing federal claims. It is further.
It's certainly something that a district judge can take into in making a decision about this case under. No removal could have landed in federal court.
I don't disagree with that. And, you know, certainly one of the younger factors is there an ongoing state proceeding? So that is something they can and should take into account.
And that's, you know, that's, I mean, that's what Judge Perry did. I mean, we come back here in the final analysis, you know, these standards of review mean that. And say that someone abuse the discretion and find the courts on basic respect for the comedy and harmonious working without having a system and the right to the state federal court and state review and so forth. Again, you have to look down the road. The number of declaratory judgments would be entertaining would be skyrocketing.
Your Honor mentioned the right term. It is comedy. It's not whether or not SCASA would be denied a day in court if the claims could not be heard in federal court. It's whether federal court accepting jurisdiction over a federal question would offend the comedy between the state and federal governments. Again, in the Harper decision, the court correctly, it's probably the best discussion I have seen of younger abstention and the factors that are involved. This is not a case that involves those sovereign interests of criminal law, of family law, of land use law. It is much more akin to Harper. It is a fundamental conflict between a portion of a state law and the First Amendment. And it's a state law which does not seek to vindicate any state sovereign interest, but rather create a private right of access enforceable by private citizens. And in looking at the First Amendment issue, since we got into that, you indicated private corporations that are substantially funded by public funds. That's not South Carolina's FOIA. South Carolina's FOIA says a private corporation that receives any public funds, any, and that includes in-kind public funds, is subject to the FOIA. And it doesn't then impose limited disclosure requirements. It requires every document that that corporation has, ever had, or ever will have, to be subject to disclosure.
Any reason to suppose the South Carolina court would be insensitive to that? You already got a trial court ruling in your favor.
Well, the reason we suppose it would be insensitive to that is the Supreme Court's prior ruling, and then it's echoed in a court of appeals ruling stating, our Supreme Court has ruled the fact that an organization, corporation, or agency is supported in whole or in part by public funds or expends public funds is sufficient grounds alone to find the organization as a public body.
And, you know, you're talking about a facial argument. The state Supreme Court may look and say, well, we may want to do this as a plot. And they may look at, you know, they may not rule facially, which is just what you've been discussing. You've been discussing almost a facial invalidation. But we know that the state Supreme Court would say, well, you know, they may want to take the particular characteristics of your particular organization into account. And they may want to have a case-by-case adjudication of this and say, this is unconstitutional as applied, or this is perfectly constitutional as applied. And, you know, why isn't a state court perfectly capable of looking at the different characteristics of different entities within the state who receive public funding, who stamp that they receive public funding, and going about it on a case-by-case as applied basis?
Judge Cooper's ruling was an as-applied decision, essentially.
You may get but,
but the reason why is because, even as this court recognized in the North Carolina Right to Life cases, resolution of First Amendment rights on a case-by-case basis, particularly as recognized by the Supreme Court in Bilotti, based on a complicated set of economic factors, is unconstitutional. It imposes a pause. You can't have corporations.
The Washington State Green decision, which is, I think, the unanimous opinion of Wisconsin, the year after that, and the city, be very, very careful about facial invalidation.
And again, we're not, that's not procedurally where we are, but I think there is a strong facial claim. And the FOIA is, if I may answer the question, my time is up. The FOIA is, thank you, Your Honor.